It's time for The Citizen Lobbyist, a discussion of local, borough, and state politics featuring Terry Snyder and Mike Malefsky.
Good morning, Citizen Lobbyist.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I am doing well. How are you doing? I understand you have changed a part of your body a little bit.
I didn't change it. I fixed it. I hope I fixed it. I had knee surgery last Friday, so I'm gimping around a little bit, but hopefully on the mend.
Well, okay. But you have reached out. You've been able to, with the magic of our technology these days, to stay in touch with the world and what's happening.
Yeah, I was able to listen to the, I think the only one this week was the Palmer City Council meeting. Is that right, Mike?
Right. There were actually two meetings. We did not cover the first one, which was the Monday night certification of the election
results.
Oh, we'll
probably talk about that.
But we could start with that, even though we're talking at a distance, if you will. It's a fairly focused and brief meeting. It's designed to pay attention to the importance of the change that happens when you're going to have a person who's been on the council go away, or for that matter, if there's a person that's going to be retained. And basically, it's a swearing in of all those who have been elected. So that even though you've been an incumbent, the important point is that each time the election happens, you have to re-up and pledge that you'll do a good job, et cetera.
Yep. And it was a little bit different this year in that we had two separate occasions for people to vote. There were three people running for two seats, which were incumbent Pete LaFrance and Richard Best were both incumbents, and new entry into it. Ms. Julie Burbrick was the third person, and so that was one kind of seat they were all vying for. And out of that, the election's been certified, and we have a new face at the council table, Julie Burbrick, who a lot of people do know in town. She's a businesswoman, owns one of the owners of Backcountry Bikes, pretty visible, very known. Came away kind of at the lead of all of those votes. And then at the end of the day, when all the votes were certified, Pete LaFrance was able to win out over Richard Best for a second term. Mr. Best has been on the council for some 12 years, I think, or more, and now he'll take a seat outside the council, and those two will take up those incumbent seats. And then the third one was the swearing-in of Linda Combs, who was finishing a term that she was appointed to for Brad Hanson, and she'll finish the last two years on that term. So short, but it's always, I was sorry I couldn't be there. I usually try to be for those swearing-ins because they mean a lot to people.
Right, and there were certainly differences in the way in which certification happens. This came after, as you've alluded to, the Canvas Board making sure that the additional 100 and some odd early absentee and question ballots were counted, because the original vote was very close between the two incumbents, Richard Best and Pete LaFrance. Mr. LaFrance had an 8-vote lead, which was extended once the Canvas Board did its work. So that was all settled up. And usually takes,
I think at the end it was 28 votes, wasn't it?
Yep, I think 28 votes separated the two of them.
Right.
And then, of course, over at the borough, coming up at the next meeting, the 16th, there will actually be two meetings. I might touch upon that right now, because the first meeting will be at 5 o'clock, and that's a certification meeting that's kept separate out of the regular meeting that will certify the Canvas Board's activities at the borough. And the borough has a bigger task. They had roughly 2,000 ballots that had to be added into the mix. And that certification will happen, and then the regular meeting will go on at 6 on Tuesday, October 16th.
Yep, I think I saw a Facebook message yesterday from the borough saying that the work of the Canvas Board was continuing. It is sort of an arduous task, if you've ever seen that. Each one that is a question or an absentee ballot, most of the question ballots, there's usually far less of them than absentees, but there's a lot that goes on to certify those. That number of votes. So you can just imagine if you had to do all of those hand voting ballots, that it could take the machines do the most work, but at the end, they have to have a little bit of help on these different atypical early voting, absentee voting, that sort of thing.
Right. Well, let's launch into a look at the meeting, the regular Palmer City Council meeting, which was at 7 o'clock on Tuesday. It was what seemed to be a relatively short agenda, and it finished up in a little over an hour, so it wasn't lengthy. What did you see? You had a chance to both listen to it and then also watch it, because we had our video stream going.
Oh, that's so helpful. It started out pretty normal. They only had three action memorandums that they had to pass through pretty quickly. One was a purchase of a computer-aided a dispatch technology to help them with their police and fire dispatch. And, of course, anything that has any amount of money, they have to be able to approve, and that one had a $18,500 price tag, so they did approve that. The other one's authorizing the managers to negotiate a new lease with a couple of people that are wanting to lease a hangar at the airport for personal aircraft for themselves, and that they didn't approve anything, but they had all the information in the packet, and they asked, they were authorizing the manager to go forth and do that. And another one was to accept Commissioner Member John Lee's resignation from the Airport Advisory Commission. Mr. Lee has served in that capacity and other capacities on for the city for a long time, and has given some really good service. So they took a moment to accept that. And, some meetings and approval meetings from other meetings that they had. They were to give three presentations out, and it turned out they gave one, unless I misunderstood, Mike, they gave one out that actually wasn't on the agenda, having to do with recognizing the Domestic Violence Awareness Month.
Right, and Lisa Boyles was there to receive that, and it was a little bit of confusion, because there had been the awards, and then it was changed up, and almost a spontaneous award type of thing happening. Mm-hmm. But as I remember, the first one was to the fire chief. He received that.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
He received that one, and then they moved on to the intervening one was a kind of a spontaneous award to the leader, Janelle, of the Friends of the Library for her work. Mm-hmm. And then after that, then there was the Domestic Violence Awareness Month presentation, and Lisa Boyles, who had been active in that arena, received it.
Mm-hmm. And then after that, they went on to the reports from the cities. The manager didn't have a whole lot this time, Mike. I think he talked about three different things. Three of which I can't really remember, having to do with projects he was working on, sidewalks and that sort of thing. But no, he didn't really get into the nitty-gritty of anything.
Right. Because what then happened was something that has not... Usually the attorney who's there may have a brief report of some sort, but he got up from his seat and came out because it was going to be a lengthy discussion, and it turned out to be that, was really a review... both for members of the council who've been there for a while and also the new member, about a topic we have touched upon in the past, the Open Meetings Act, so-called, mm-hmm. and how to behave under the guidelines that are provided in law. So what was your impression?
Right. Well, he does it pretty – is it every year he does it? It seems like he does it every year, but I don't
think
know
so. Whenever there's an election, it's changed.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it might be an eye-opener for people that don't, are kind of used to watching the legislature and not so used to watching local bodies, and they don't really know what the guidance is for that on the Open Meetings Act. And, you know, basically the thumbnail description of it is that three council members can only talk to three council members about any type of pending ordinances or action that's going to affect the city. So you can't go have a meeting after the meeting, so to speak. If you have concerns or you're asking, you know, for support on a piece of legislation, you can talk to three people, two people, three total can talk about it. And I think that's kind of a, it's very different than what the state can go behind closed doors for hours at a time, as many people as they want, and talk about things, but it doesn't work that way with cities.
I think the other point that he made, he wanted to walk through and say, some sense is that, for example, let's take a Glenn Massey Theater venue performance, which is going to seat 500 people, and could all members of the council go to that performance and sit in various places? Well, my read of all of it is, of course they can. So there's sometimes
it's a so-called social event.
Yeah, and if sometimes what, and I think that's the kind of thing that if it's a more focused social event where you have a smaller number of people and the likelihood of council members bouncing off one another gives the perception, even though it's a social event, that potentially they would be talking about the public's business, then you want to be careful about it. But I think that it sometimes, for example, you have colony days or you have these activities. You don't, and I think this springs from something that the lawyer, Mr. Getty, did remind people about, that it happened some time ago when another entity in the borough had a public meeting and then would afterwards retire to a public watering hole restaurant and have another meeting, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Without the public.
Without the public, right. Unless you were sitting around. And as he pointed out, the media did some good service because they happened to be doing this once with a reporter sitting next to them, and the rest is history. Yeah.
Right. The other thing I think you got into that people kind of forget is that we now have conversations over email. And that it's important when you get an email regarding city business, it's addressed to all of you. When you want to answer that email, you don't reply all, because in essence, that does break the Open Meetings Act. You may send it back to the clerk and she can distribute through her distribution, but you can. That's kind of a no-no right there. It's easy to do to reply all to something you want, something to weigh in on something, but that in itself would be breaking the, since there are seven of them, that would be breaking the Open Meetings Act. And I think people forget about that one a lot. He also talked a little bit about Texas and that were happening, would be happening during the meeting, and those could may become public record, although I think I've heard that's not the case from the borough attorney, so I'm not sure. I don't think that's a big issue at the city or at the borough at this point, so it doesn't really get answered very much, but he did touch on that a little bit. So they'll get some of this. The new member, Julie Bruberek, I would imagine will go to AML. The Alaska Municipal League has quite a good, what they call, boot camp for new elected officials, and they go through a lot of this. It was used to be, when I was serving on borough boards, that the clerk would give this just to everybody that was on any type of a decisioning body this class, so that you'd kind of have an idea of what the Open Meetings Act was. But I don't think they do that anymore.
Right. Well, so, and the other thing about it, maybe almost a sidebar, has to do with the interesting question of a member of a body being there and has communication devices, might be a phone, might be a tablet, might be a computer, and you've referenced Texas texts, and of course it would be egregious to have one board or council member texting another one about the matter under discussion while not saying things in the open session. But of course there's the other aspect of people from the outside, if you will, texting and communicating and so on. And it's a whole area that apparently is not a problem if you want to do that. But it does raise all kinds of interesting questions about is what is happening up there really what's happening up there, or are there all kinds of other below the surface activities at work?
Well, I don't think it's been challenged. I don't think it's been challenged at the state legislature or the municipal levels that anybody's really challenged it. And so I don't think we'll really have a definitive until it's challenged and someone, and that'll probably be when someone abuses it. So that's kind of wait and see on that, Mike. But there was one other presentation report. We kind of skipped over that I thought was kind of interesting, and that was the clerk's report.
Oh, yes, yes.
And that had to do with the election and the form the election might take next year with her interpretation of it. If the one ballot measure that was on the borough ballot measure moving the elections to the borough elections to from October to November, right now they the cities and the boroughs have them together. But if they, the city wanted to align with the borough in moving, then they would have to do their own legislation to make that happen. And there was a little confusion on there what the ballot measure said as to when it became effective. And there was kind of an interesting discussion, I thought, didn't you?
Right. And I've thought a bit about this, and my impression is that before the election, the city's clerks had pretty much, I think, they did, certainly did here in Palmer and I believe in other locations, point out and were fully understanding that the Proposition B3 to move the election date would only apply to the borough. The cities mm-hmm. would have to take action on their own, and they have the capability to move it to be consistent. But the real question is was more practical. Once the borough begins that move, what differences are there going to be in the way the city's elections are run? Because they have typically been entwined, although separate, with separate balloting, with the borough process and opening up places to vote and so on. And so I thought what I saw was, okay, we were waiting, and now that this has happened, we have an opportunity to look at it, and we can either do what we have been doing or change. What I thought was most important was that the clerk pointed out that, well, if you're thinking about this, you have a very short window of opportunity if you plan to affect next year's election because of the guidelines of how this works when you make a change. And my impression was, after a little bit of discussion, raising a number of the issues, I think it was Councilman Pete LaFrance who brought it up. He said, well, it was obvious to him that there was a lot of things to consider and that this wasn't going to be possible. So let's just look at next year doing what we have been doing. In the meantime, work on how we want to make that happen.
Yeah, I think it was kind of unclear of when it would take effect. And so they didn't do anything. And it will take somebody to come back to say we must change our own ordinance. And, it seems like there will have to be a discussion. I think Councilwoman Combs brought up a really good point in that, it's going to clearly cost them some money, they thought, because they don't own voting machines. And right now they use the state voting machines. And that if the date is changed, how will they handle that? And if that's the case, she wanted to know what the cost of the city would be. They're going into budget time, and also to find out what the cost of a mail-in would be. And if, there was some discussion, would that mail-in be the same, have it in October, or would they, join up with the November date? And that's kind of unclear now. So they have a few things that they need to look at. I'm looking at the ordinance, Mike, that passed it, and it does not say about a date, but it said that it's an advisory vote to do it. But it doesn't say when it will take an effect. So I guess that's a question
for the borough.
For the borough, and what the borough would say when they're going to when they have to adopt the code, because it's not clear on the legislation, at least that I see.
Or whether they can make that happen. Well, it's interesting.
Yeah, whether they have the 2019 election or they have the 2020 election.
Right.
If it's 2019, there's some urgency because they have to apparently they have to make that change by their own code much quicker. But if it's 2020, then they have a little more time to figure it out.
Right. And I thought there was a comment made by the new council member, Julie Burbrick, essentially asking a question around the potential impact of mail-in voting.
Yeah, I think it was Sabrina Combs, but yeah, I think that has been a question.
Well, Sabrina Combs did that? Good.
I think so, but okay. we could listen to the tape again.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I do think that they have been watching, at least some of the council members, of the high participation rate that the city of Anchorage has gotten in regards to them changing their own election last year, and that how they got through it with seemingly little bumps. So I think, you know, it makes sense, particularly since it's a money issue, that they look at that to see if, you know, it's going to have an effect on their budget. If it's cheaper, you know, if they're going to spend money, that they spend it wisely. So it was a good discussion to have, I think.
Right.
And after that, Mike, there really wasn't too very much. They transferred a non-objection to a liquor license change at the Palmer Ale House, just owner change there. And then they did have a discussion, and this is where I got a little lost on a council member to serve on the Municipal League Board of Directors. Did they really approve that, or for anybody to do that, or did they kick that down the road?
Well, I think it was more that they didn't clearly go through. We had to, first of all, there was some question about what position on the board of directors they were talking about. That was a step one. We did have the volunteering by Councilwoman Sabrina Combs to do whichever one was the one that was going to be open for Palmer. And apparently there's a kind of a protocol about this, so there should be one there. And because it was getting late and all, my impression was they basically said, sure, that's okay. And the detail of what position, and apparently Sabrina would be the one that would do it, would be worked out with the city clerk and didn't require any other action on the part of the council, as I remember. I mean, that's what I think is happening. It felt like it was going forward. But there was just this, it didn't require the council to bring it up again at the next meeting in order to approve this, et cetera. But they would go ahead and make it so.
If there's a qualification, I think they try to work it out with the borough because it's a district type appointment. And this is where the historical knowledge of the council is handy. And I think that they, maybe it was Linda Combs, who's participated in AML things, thought that it was Palmer's chance to have somebody in a position, and it is an important position. There's a lot of muscle behind AML, Alaska Municipal League, and they take on a lot of issues and have a big voice with the legislature. So there's three meetings a year, I think, that they have. I think they go to Juneau and Tulalip, and they have one in Anchorage. So it is kind of a big deal for them to be able to participate in this. So we'll see what happens. At least they gave the okay to spend the money, and I guess they'll figure out between the clerk's office who else in the borough is able to do it, and if it is indeed Palmer's turn. So that was about it, Mike. There really wasn't anything else. They canceled their November 13th meeting. We probably should say that they have an intense amount of meetings between now and the end of the year. All having to do mostly, or a lot of them having to do with the budget. They'll start next Tuesday with a budget presentation on the 23rd, and then they weave in with their regular meeting schedule, which is every other week, a special meeting having to do with the budget until they get it adopted, and they must have it adopted by December 11th. So that might be kind of interesting to follow, too.
Okay. All righty. Okay, we will. Well, with that, I think we've come pretty much to the close of another discussion with the citizen lobbyist about things, background to what's happening at all these meetings. Any last comments you'd like to throw in here?
I think so, B. It looks like we're still having a little bit of fall weather out there. Enjoy the nice days while we have them.
Right. In between the rain. Okay.
Yeah. And don't forget where your snow tires live, because it's coming.
Yes, it's time. It's almost time.
All right. See you later, Mike.
Yep. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too.
You've been listening to The Citizen Lobbyist, broadcast on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and repeated at 5 p.m. on Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. You can find the podcast at radiofreepalmer.org. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.